The Mac Observer's Mac Geek Gab number 36 for January 23rd, 2006. Greetings, folks, and welcome to the Mac Observer's Mac Geek Gab. I'm Dave Hamilton, and you...
Oh my God! How much caffeine did you have tonight?
Oh, I actually been drinking caffeine all day.
You just got all that pent up energy.
I do.
Wow, outstanding! Yeah, so it was good to hear the band back.
The band's back.
We kind of missed them when we were at Macworld, but boy, gotta tell you folks,
you don't mind
if exhausted.
You don't mind if I step all over you and introduce you first, though, do you?
Yeah.
You're John Braun from the Mac Observer.
Yeah, people know that, but if they don't, John Braun, Mac Observer, Dave Hamilton.
Mac
and hey, boy, we were just exhausted, folks. You may have noticed we went away for a week, but we did not one, not two.
But three.
We did three podcasts from Macworld, and boy, it was a blast.
That's right.
Best show ever, I got to say. I had a lot of fun. You had a lot of fun. We were speaking.
Did we have fun?
Live podcast.
I guess we had fun. I'm still recovering.
It's work that is fun, I think.
It is work that is fun. That's right. That's right. Yeah, much better than a real job.
But you were a madman. I mean, you were all over the place. You did a podcast symposium and...
Yeah.
And all that stuff, and that was a lot of fun.
It was great.
At that event there. So we had a great time. Our coverage, I think, was... oh, my gosh. How many articles did we... Almost 100.
Is that right? 100 Macworld articles?
I measured it. It was like 91 or something. I did, I think, 7 photo galleries, a whole pile of articles. So
that's great.
So we hope you all enjoyed the coverage. We want to serve you, the readers in this case.
That's right. Well, they're the listeners who are also readers, right? I mean, that's what it comes down to.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. And we got a lot of people saying, hey, love the coverage and love the live podcast.
Pretty cool. We'll talk a little bit about this. We did the live podcast, what was it, a week ago, Tuesday, from the show floor. And going into that, I just assumed there wouldn't really be anybody that would sit through the whole thing, right? I just sort of figured...
Me too.
Yeah, I figured it'd just be John and I there. We'd be doing our thing, and occasionally somebody would walk by and poke their head in, and we'd have to like beat on them to get them to talk to us so we could give them a prize. And that's why I went and got those prizes, to attract people. But, man, I mean, it was, standing room only. It was great. I don't remember everyone's name. Of course, Michael Johnston, the computer nap, our friendly AAC converter friend, was there, and David Lawrence was there, another listener, regular listener, and beyond that, I don't believe I know anyone's name, I'm just gonna stop.
Sorry about that.
Sorry about that. Also, while we're saying sorry about that, I wanted to say sorry to Ezra for not being able to catch up with you on Friday. Ezra is another one of you listener folk, and he has actually helped us out a lot in the audio department, and also he made our a promo for us that we actually wound up using and getting, I think it was run on Curry's daily source code there. So so there you go.
I think the show was very successful. I was joking with you about this.
You weren't.
Yeah. Maybe you didn't think it was funny, but now, unlike my normal calm demeanor during the show, which, by the way, yes, I could talk like this, like Dave, all the time, but that's just not me.
Wow. That sounded pretty good, though.
Yeah, but I can't maintain that level.
No, that's it. You can.
But on the show floor, as Dave knows, I'm a madman. I mean, I just pump out the articles, I take the pictures and stuff like that, and so I'm cruising on the floor, and to me, one of the signs that the show is successful is... the urge that I have to just like part the sea and move people out of the way because I got to get somewhere.
You mean they don't automatically do that for you?
Not yet. I mean, some people saw the Mac Observer shirt.
Couple of years and they'll do that for you.
but yeah, I mean, even, and I was talking to people, even Friday, Dave, 4:00.
I know.
When I don't think a lot of people knew, the place was packed. The level did not drop off. All the vendors I spoke to said, We can't believe it. Now, maybe it's because it's the one event a year now instead of the two events. The East Coast is pretty much history.
Well, our podcast symposium, we had that panel that ran almost until 5:00 on Friday or something. So,
really?
Yeah. I got a bunch of emails from people actually asking me how I'm doing. And it's humbling to know that you all care. Yes, I still have the Bell's palsy. It's much better than it was, as I'm sure you can hear. I'm probably at about, maybe even, we'll call it 80% now. The only thing that's not really working at all is my lower lip on the right side. But otherwise, everything works. It's just not 100%. So thank you.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
So,
well,
we're going to keep gabbing.
We have a ton to go through. We're going to basically do this show with audio comments and maybe some things from listener feedback. And then a couple of rants thrown in if we don't burn up all our time, which I'm sure we already have. So that's it. Good night. Thank you very much. Oh, wait. It does feel good to be back in the normal setup. So,
yes.
Yes.
It's good to be home, even though I have a slight cold. You may hear my voice is kind of weird. And I may be making odd noises like that, odder than usual. But I got a little cold. I think part of it is just being packed on a plane with all these other people and the workplace is full of people who are ill.
Did we run through Randy's single storage iPhoto iTunes comment last time? Do you remember that? I don't think we did.
I believe so, but it's been so many shows ago.
All right, we're going to address it again. And if it's a repeat, well, I don't think it is. So,
there you go.
Hey, guys. Randy. I am in the process of trying to figure out how to put together a single storage location for my massive iPhoto and iTunes libraries. It's just not feasible to keep them separate machines, and one machine dedicated to that would probably be the best use of space. And I'd like it to be an external FireWire drive or just an external hard drive, but I can't seem to figure out the details of how to get iTunes and iPhoto from different machines to use a shared library. I'm familiar somewhat with the sharing feature that iTunes has, but I guess I haven't been successful in trying to get it to actually share between machines when it's residing on one computer. So I was hoping you could give some pointers on that, or maybe use it as a topic of discussion. Great show. Thanks. Have a great day. Happy New Year.
Thank you, Randy. You want to take this one, John, or should I run with it?
I mean, I'll toss out a few thoughts, but I think you probably thought about this more than I did. But
well, I do it here, so but go ahead.
Okay, because basically what I've seen is that, you know, you're so he was saying iTunes and iPhoto.
That's right.
Now, the very basic thing I know is that if you look in your music folder, you have an iTunes folder. And if you look in your pictures folder, you have an iPhoto library.
Yeah, but you don't want to share
a stab here.
Go ahead.
Okay, and I was going to take a stab that if you alias those, I may not have understood his question fully.
Well, no, so you did.
Okay, so he wants to access, from one machine, access things that are spread about. And
That's right.
One stab I could take at it, though I think it may not work, would be to, you know, create an alias or a shortcut to wherever the heck they are and make sure the machines are networked. I don't know how well that would work. I never tried it, but instinctually I think you may have a certain degree of success, and now you can correct me or clarify on how you do that, since you actually do it and I don't.
I will clarify. You're absolutely right. That would work as long as you were 100% diligent about never having iPhoto or iTunes open on more than one machine at a time.
Okay.
Because in addition to having the folder where the library is, it's also got the there's an XML file is actually what it turns out to be. I believe it's an XML for both, but it doesn't matter. It's an index file, and that file cannot be opened by more than one computer at a time. So if you've got iTunes open from two machines, who knows what's going to happen? It's not a pretty sight. So what you want to do, the best solution. And it's not perfect, but the best solution is to use the sharing that Randy talked about, right? Where you go into for iTunes, for example, and you go to the preferences, or you go to the iTunes menu, you go to preferences, and you go to sharing. And the second checkbox down, at least in the current version, is share my music. And you can either choose to share the entire library or just share certain playlists. And you can even put a password on it, which isn't a bad idea. You can have all the Macs in your house remember the password. But at least that way, it's not just always sharing in case you wind up going somewhere with your Mac if you've got an unportable or whatever. The downside, of course, to that is that you can't add songs to the library from more than one computer. That's the downside. And obviously with iTunes, you can't copy songs via iTunes from one computer to the other. You'd have to do John's sharing thing. But it does work. We use it here in the house, between the house and the office, actually, because we're all kind of, it's all together, sort of. We've got Ethernet that runs between the house and the office. So, and it works fine. iPhoto lets you do the same thing, very similar fashion. But the cool part about it, because the RIAA isn't involved, is that you can actually, if I fire up iPhoto and I want to copy a picture from my wife's iPhoto library to one of mine, I can just copy it. I just grab it and drag it into my library and across it goes. So there's that's the only way to do it, is using the sharing feature. Or at least that's the only way to do it without causing great, or bringing great risk upon yourself of corrupting your various libraries. So,
I think we did cover this in some detail. Maybe we didn't get it right the first time, but
maybe not.
Anyways, okay, that's a good one.
All right, you want to do another one? I guess that's why we're here, isn't it?
I don't know why we're here.
What's that? Oh, you know what?
I don't know.
There's this next comment, and actually we talked about doing this comment a couple of weeks ago, but I couldn't find it. And this actually, it's weird how this all relates together. What I do is I do the podcast from my dual G4 machine that's here in the office that's going to move up to the studio, which we can talk about in a little bit. But all the audio comments come into my email, so I have them on my PowerBook, and I actually share my PowerBook's iTunes library with this machine, and I play all of the comments across the network, and it's fine, no problem. Well, I knew I'd queued this comment up, but a couple weeks ago I went to play it and couldn't. Today I went and looked, and sure enough it was there, and I walked across and looked at this machine. It wasn't here, and it was a movie file. Somebody had sent it in, David, who had sent this comment in, had sent it in as a movie, but apparently it was encoded in such a way that it couldn't be shared. So I figured, well, let me see if I can convert it to MP3. I highlighted the movie and I went up to the advanced menu, and instead of saying convert to MP3, it actually said convert selection for iPod. Yeah. Now iTunes, and I don't know what version this appeared in. I'm running the latest version of iTunes on both of my machines here, which is iTunes 6.0.2, complete with the music library at the bottom, or the music store rather. But,
and the mini store?
The mini store, yeah. So I did the...
Oh, we'll talk about that.
Yeah, I did the conversion, right, for the iPod, and then it appeared. Now, it's still a movie. That's the interesting part. But it converted it to an MP4 or whatever it is, right? It's a QuickTime... Yeah, I guess it's not telling me on this machine because...
So did he record it in iMovie, maybe?
I don't know what he recorded it in, but any movie that you have in iTunes, if it's not already playable on an iPod, and there's only certain movie formats that are playable on an iPod, iTunes will actually do the conversion internally. You do not have to export to QuickTime and do it. And I tried it with a couple other things, and it worked great. And now it'll export to a video iPod. So with that said, here comes his question.
Hi, guys. It's David from Adelaide in South Australia here. Firstly, love the show. I've been listening since the very first podcast.
Whoa.
I switched to the Mac about a month ago and bought my first PowerBook. One thing that I'm finding a little bit interesting is on the console menu, when I first log in, I've got menu meters installed, but I can see another application that starts around the same time as menu meters called Menu Cracker. It's an interesting title, but down at the bottom after menu meters is loaded, I could see another log entry that says config d open square brackets 33 close square brackets, and then it gives a set keychain found generic password error. I was just wondering, is this a good thing? Does it happen to everyone else's machine, or is this menu cracker thing trying to act like a bit of a Trojan horse? Hopefully you can give me a bit of a hand. It's a little bit worrying.
All right. Do you know the answer to this, John?
As to what Menu Cracker is?
Yeah.
I looked it up. I think I found it on either it was Version Tracker or Mac Update, but there's some functionality, I think, up in the menu bar that was lost in, that I think things under 10.0 or 10.1 supported, and then trying to develop applications to put cool little things up in the menu bar was broken. So this is something, an open source thing, I believe, that people will bring into their application that lets you do that again, if I recall correctly.
That's exactly what I found. Yep.
So and, the name is...
And Menu Meters
yeah, so
does
no,
it.
No, it's not cracking yeah. your computer.
No, Menu
yeah,
Meters
that's what
does
I came
it.
Up with.
Yep.
Because I saw that and I'm like, ooh, that's not a good name. But it's all it always happens, and it always happens before Menu Meters. So it's right. a good thing.
Yeah. I found exactly the same thing. Now, as far as the... I did some searching for the error message that he's getting about the keychain with no password. Now, of course, it's...
Config D, was it, he meant?
Yeah. It was weird that Config D would pick that up, at least to me, but I'm sure someone out there will say, no, Dave, it's not weird. You're an idiot. In which case, you're right.
If you're an idiot.
Not you.
Okay.
You save Go that ahead. For after the show. Okay. There is the keychain utility and of course keychain first aid that can be run from OS X. So if there is something wrong with your keychain, that's a good place to start. I live in that little program, especially now with Tiger that they added spotlight or search capabilities to it. I love that little keychain utility program. So that's my two cents on that.
Yeah, now if you're curious,
Did you just crack a whip in the background, or did I hear something on my
not
own?
Yet.
Not yet. Save that for later.
But actually, a tip for folks is that if you do see, you know, especially things with a D, is a system daemon.
Yeah,
daemon. Whatever you want to call it, which is typically a system background process. If you want to know what it does, and you see it in the console, which we went into great detail about all the wonderful things that you can see in the console, what your Mac is doing behind your back. If you go to the terminal and you type man space and the name of the thing, like here, type man space config D, it'll give you a whole wonderful Unix manual page. And for example, this comes up and says config D, system configuration daemon. And then it gives you incredibly geeky stuff about all the command line switches. And it gives you a pretty verbose description of what it does. And I'm not going to read the thing to you, but if you're wondering
what
a lot of
these
things...
Won't you read to me, John?
Nah.
No.
Maybe before bedtime.
Okay.
but if you're wondering what a lot of those things that show up in the console application do, if you go into terminal and type man for manual page space and then the name of it, if it is a Unix command, it'll come up and give you a clue as to what it does.
Then there
you go. Toss that in there.
Yeah. We love the man page. Which is different from the man show, right? I hope.
Still do that?
What's
it used
that?
To be funny, and then one of the guys left.
Is that right? I never really watched it.
It was pretty crude guy. He was,
is that right?
You know, beer and women and
hey,
all that stuff.
I have a hint that thing that's been bothering me occasionally, and my guess is it bothers all of us occasionally if we do anything with audio on our Macs. And that is, occasionally, I will notice that my iChat sounds stop working, right? System beeps work, but iChat stops. If I do a video chat in iChat, it works fine. But the, you know, the actual little bings and stuff that happen when someone IMs me and pesters me and all that, those go away. And as it turns out, what happens is the Mac usually runs, and of course, I have my notes in front of me and chop this off, so I'm doing this from memory. But the Mac usually runs at 44.1 kilohertz audio
sounds
sampling,
right?
And if something changes that, the Mac can go as high as 96. A lot of programs can't address it. So the way to change it is to go into is it in the sound control panel? Is that where we can change it? See, this is why it's nice.
Yeah,
to have
I think there's
notes.
Well, there's sound output. Maybe sound output?
No, that's not sound output. You got to go to audio MIDI setup.
MIDI.
Audio MIDI setup, which is in the utilities folder, I believe. Audio.
Oh, okay. I've been there before.
Audio
you
MIDI
go there
setup.
Set up things like SoundFlower and stuff, right?
Yeah. And
I haven't touched that too.
In here, you can change the audio output and change it to 44,100 hertz, and that will get you back in business, or so they tell me. But it's actually worked for me, so.
Well, there it is, audio MIDI setup. Look at that.
Yep.
But I'm not a MIDI type of guy. But I do see here. Yes, it has the source format, all that great stuff.
I was worried. We use Audio Hijack Pro to do this, and of course, opening audio MIDI setup while we're doing the show is probably about the most dangerous thing I could have ever done. So thankfully, it looks like we made it out unscathed. But there is a Mac OS X Hints article all about this, and I will I will put that in the show notes. So, what else do we have here? Can I rant a little bit about QuickBooks?
QuickBooks? Yeah, I don't really use it, but I think you do for the business stuff, right?
I do. And this is something that everyone...
Rant, brother.
Everyone that's using the latest version of QuickBooks, which I guess they're calling 2006, I should know this, right? Before I start my rant, so we'll go to QuickBooks.com because they're smart.
I can rant.
So, wait a minute. We've got products. Hang on. QuickBooks Pro for Mac version 2006. I was right. Okay. So, QuickBooks on the Mac does not support networking, meaning you can't have QuickBooks opened on two computers at the same time, which is fine. They tell you this, and it's always been this way, and there's a couple of situations where that might be helpful, of course, but you can't do it, and such is life. No problem, right? Well, the latest version, the same way, I had talked to them. They sent me a review copy, and we actually use QuickBooks here at TMO and a couple other businesses that I'm involved with, Backbeat Media and Deals on the Web and my little Dave the Nerd business, and so run lots of QuickBooks stuff. One day, Lisa had QuickBooks open on her machine and was in one of the files, and I opened it on my machine to just take a look, and it opened, and all of a sudden I looked across the room. I said, wait, are you in the TMO QuickBooks file? And she said, yeah. And I said, wait a minute, so am I. And I could see the last transaction she put in. Yeah, very dangerous, right? So I emailed my contact at Intuit and said, what's going on here? And they said, yeah, it doesn't support that. You need to read the file that comes with the updater that tells you, warns you about this network stuff. I was like, well, okay. So I had done the update automatically inside QuickBooks. It now does this auto updates thing. So I'd never seen this file, but I went out and searched it out and found it and read it. And the file says the following two things. One is that you should not use QuickBooks from... It, because of a problem with OS X and the way QuickBooks can and can't lock files, you should not run QuickBooks from the computer that you have the data stored on if you're going to do network access. So they then suggest that you get set up a third Mac, right, presumably, that will house only the data, and then you'll run QuickBooks from the other two Macs, and then it can lock the data, and you won't have this problem. And I said, and I told the folks at Intuit this, and I'm going to tell you this. So you got to know, if you're running QuickBooks on the computer that has the data file and someone else tries to come in, they can, and they can screw up the data, right? Potentially the data could become corrupted. We haven't had that problem here, thank goodness.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice.
But you know, I mean, it's like, first of all, telling people to use a second Mac or a third Mac, the whole point of file sharing is to not have a dedicated server machine, right? I mean, OS X's file sharing works great. Why would you know, QuickBooks is built for small offices. How many small offices are going to just say, oh, yeah, just go pick up another Mac. Go, you know, use Jim's Mac, mm-hmm, whatever. Mm-hmm. Crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so this is a warning to any of you that are using QuickBooks or planning on it. It's great software. I continue to use it, but you got to be really careful. Now, they say they're working on this, but to me, that's totally unacceptable and dangerous. So consider this a public service rant.
Yeah, you know, I'm hoping that, you know, they maybe take a couple of computer science courses, because, you know, there's things like lock files and dual phase commit and, you know, lots of fancy pants computer science stuff where this is, come on, guys, this is known stuff.
It is known.
You're going to design the system so that there can be, first off, if the access is not allowed, then you don't allow it.
That's right.
There's a way to cut, there's a way, I mean, however you do it, I'm not going to go into detail, I'm a computer science guy, but, you know, get your guys to look at this. I mean, you may have dug yourself in a hole by, you know, writing the software in, you know, a single user fashion and then wanting to network and stuff like that. But I'm with you, brother.
Yeah.
I mean, that's just inexcusable. I mean, and to me, the assumption is with any software, if it allows you to do something, it's okay.
You got it.
To say, read the README to know what, because you know how many people read the instructions. No.
Yeah, nobody. I didn't. Why? It worked. Why would I read the instructions? You know, I read the instructions when I have a problem. So, and then the other thing is,
that's terrible. Go, man.
We used, you know, previous versions of QuickBooks. I think we were on 2004. At some point along the line, they changed the data file format, which is fine, except now, if I need to run a report, I used to be able to run reports over the network, no problem. Now the only, I was running 1099 reports, right, for all the TMO writers, right, because you got to get your 1099, John. And
you pay them?
No, this is for another business, rather. no, so it took, if I was running them across the network from my machine, it literally took 10 minutes for the report to come up, whereas it came up almost instantaneously on the local machine. So not only did they screw it up to the point where you can't, you know, where you got this file locking issue, but they're telling you not to run it from the local drive when that's the only place you can possibly run it from if you want to do any sort of reporting. So, and I told them this too. And it didn't used to be that way. So anyway, I'll step down off the soapbox now.
Yeah. Now it could be something annoying that Apple did. I don't know.
No, same version of OS X. Same version of OS X. No problem.
All right.
Man,
all
right. That's crazy.
So, who knows? Okay, that's you got the rant for, that one rant's enough.
I think so.
Yeah. I was going to rant about something else, but it just pales in comparison. It is life threatening, but
life threatening. Should we go with another question?
I think we should.
Okay, we'll go with
audio or you want to do
Doug from Connecticut,
Doug about
let's do Doug from Connecticut, and then we can go do another.
Hey guys, this is Doug from Connecticut.
There he is,
second time caller. Just listening to your latest podcast, and you guys sound kind of beat after attending the Macworld. there in California. I'm just curious, I have one question for you. I know you guys are probably going to talk about listener feedback next time. How are all developers dealing with the fat binaries? You guys are all about Skype, and if you go out and order your trusty new Intel iBooks, Power, whatever.
MacBook Pro.
Is it going to work? Is Skype going to work? Is it going to run natively? Is it going to run under emulation, which might cause all kinds of fun things to happen? I'm just curious, developers like that, are they going to jump on board quickly? I know, Apple has a list of Microsoft who are going to make their new binaries. I'm just curious what you guys think. Great show. Keep up the good work. Thanks, guys.
Thank you, Doug. You want to take this, John?
And he's in Connecticut. That's cool.
Yeah.
What do the developers think? I'm actually going to go out on a limb here. I'm going to say I would have preferred that Apple did not release their Intel machines.
Yeah.
Because my understanding is the guidance they gave the developers at the last Worldwide Developers Conference, which is typically in the summer, was,
yep,
all right, guys, in a year, we'd like you to be ready.
That's,
I believe,
right.
That was what was said at the time.
Yeah, well, so they sort of led everyone to believe. They said first half 2006, which everyone, of course, assumed meant, June 30th.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
So the problem right now is that, although some jumped on the bandwagon right away, the tools were available, you could get the developer kit and all that stuff there, and some really took it seriously, and I think assumed that they should, or just thought,
that's,
let's,
right,
get it done sooner than later. I think based on some of the folks that I talked to on the show floor, a lot of people were not prepared for the machines to come out this early.
No, they weren't.
So consequently, you're going to have some developers, the big ones and the little ones, that do not have their apps ready and will not have them ready, I think, until I think a lot of their planning went around, June, July.
Yep.
So now, from what I've heard, though, a lot of the, you do have, so you do have a few things on the Intel Macs. So one is they have this Rosetta thing.
Right.
Which is the emulation. So it'll run the PowerPC code, it'll translate it to the Intel code, and depending on what you're doing, I think it even supports AltaVec, which is the...
That's right.
Velocity engine.
Yep.
Which,
and I believe it supports multiprocessor too, from what I understand.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure.
It's,
so
it's a threading thing. It's at that level. So.
Yeah. So the thing is, right now, and the reports I've seen are mixed based on, what the application does and stuff like that. But a lot of the things, like I believe the Adobe Creative Suite,
right,
is not a universal binary, and a lot of things are not. Now, the one thing that's a definite no-go is Classic.
Right. Yeah, I heard that. That's right.
Your Classic apps will, they're cutting the cord here. That's it. No more Classic stuff. Probably the only thing I run in Classic that I love to death and I'll have to go away from is Easy Envelopes. It was written in 82 or I'm sorry, 92 or something like that. I mean, it's just still a very good envelope printing application.
Sure is.
A lot of addresses in there. So classic stuff is out. The other things, now you may be asking, how can you tell if your application is a universal binary or PowerPC?
The Git info box will tell you.
The Git info box will tell you, and there's also another one. So both Dave and I are right.
What's the other one?
If you do go to the system profiler, okay, and there's the software category, and you click on applications, it will list all of the applications on your computer, and there is a column that says kind.
Oh, that's awesome.
And it will either say PowerPC or universal, or now I'm seeing another category here, native, parentheses, preferred, or classic, which I think is a Carbon app.
That would make sense. Okay, yeah.
So I think that would run also. So unless it says only
Carbon
classic.
Should run.
Yes, and actually a lot of things, oh my, look here. Like I'm just, not to beat on HP, but I'm looking here, and this was one of the things that was brought up, device drivers. Like I'm looking right here, and I see HP LaserJet Utility, classic.
Yep.
HP, oh, actually these are utilities, but there are some things listed here that say classic. Those are not going to run.
No.
On the new machines. And I've also heard about a lot of device drivers. So a lot of hardware.
Yeah.
You're going to... So I would say, hold off. We may get a nasty call from...
Well, no,
from people
I...
people at Apple.
I was going to say, you know, I ordered a MacBook Pro within about 10 minutes of the keynote ending, right?
Okay, and, so I'll get the nasty call.
Yeah, well, no. I've been having second thoughts ever since. But the reason I did it, and I've always preached, right, that you know, never buy Rev 1 of something new, especially something this new.
And what did you do?
What's that?
And what did you do?
I went and did it. But, you know, the funny thing is I had a Power Mac 6100 delivered to my office the day that you could get those initially, too. And that was sort of the same thing, right? I mean, a similar situation when we moved from 68K to PowerPC. But it was not a painless process. The problem is I use a PowerBook as my main machine, and the PowerBook really hasn't seen a speed bump in like 3 years. I mean, nothing noticeable, right? So
G4 is...
It sucks.
It can't handle it, man.
It can't do it, no. So, you know, my feeling is, well... Especially on my PowerBook, but really on none of my machines. I don't run a lot of games. And of course, games, from what I understand, aren't going to run very well under Rosetta, at least if they've got to do a lot of graphics. Right, because there's just, you know, how much horsepower is left.
So it's a beefier graphic chip.
It is.
That'll help when they are rewritten.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And the device drivers, you know, I'm worried about, you know, will I be able to use my scanner and starting to think through all that stuff. But... I haven't been able to convince myself to cancel the order, and I don't think I will. I think I'll get it. So, but that's good. It'll mean that I'll be living with one of those machines as soon as I get it, and I should get one of the first round. So, we'll wind up talking a lot about that here on the Geek Gab. So,
So I'd say it's still safe. I mean, I'm looking at the Apple Store right now. You can still get, though I'm sure quantities are limited, but I still see Power Mac G5 and iMac G5. And Mac Mini listed.
Oh,
so
yeah.
they're breaking it out. So I would say if there are apps that you use, like, you know, a lot of the creative professionals, if you use Adobe Creative Suite or the other things that have not yet been optimized with a universal binary, then you're still okay getting a G5. But down the road, of course, they're eventually going to drop the G5 and it's all going to be the Intel. So it's kind of a weird, you know, weird area to be in right now.
It is, yeah. It definitely is.
But hey, they got it out, and it was so cool to see the Intel Big Cheese get up on stage there in the bunny suit with the
that's right.
You know, the big wafer of chips. And
I got another question. It's sort of related here.
Uh-huh.
From our buddy Matt Holt.
Okay.
Are we ready to go?
Yeah.
Hey, Dave. Hey, John. Matt Holt from London here again. I sent you in an audio comment a few months ago regarding FireWire, and I'm afraid I'm on the same tracks again today. You're probably aware that FireWire is slowly being dropped by Apple on their new Macs, and it was dropped on the iPod in the last generation as well. With the switch to Intel, though, it's bringing about some theories in my head that possibly it's got something to do with the FireWire $1 a port fiasco that went on between Steve Jobs and Intel a while back. Obviously, Intel then went their own route, developed USB 2, etc. I'm sure you know the story, but I'm wondering if this new Intel switch has got something to do with it, whether that's the reason that it's slowly being dropped and USB 2 is taken over instead, something to do with those initial negotiations. So I just wondered if you guys had a theory on it or an opinion. Am I just going insane? So anyway, thanks for the show. Really enjoy it. Can't wait for the next one. And good luck.
I don't think they're dropping FireWire. I'm just going to come right out and say that. Obviously,
I think he's insane.
Yeah. Obviously, they have dropped. There are two things noticeably missing from the especially from the MacBook Pro, and that is a FireWire 800 port is not there.
Right.
And a modem.
800 never really caught on.
Yeah. I mean, some people use it certainly, but it didn't gain mainstream. It just didn't catch on, like you said. However, I doubt we'll ever see a Mac that doesn't have a FireWire 400 port. Remember, all of those DV cameras out there use FireWire 400, and Apple would be damned if they were to say to all those people, I can't plug it into a Mac anymore. I mean, that would be it, right? No, those aren't going away. Mm-hmm. So,
and the stuff that I like to do with FireWire, what one is, I've mentioned before, I'll mention it again, is I have an external FireWire enclosure, FireWire 400.
Right, right.
I love being able to bring that on the road and not have to worry about having yet another freaking power brick.
Yeah.
To bring with me. And also, I believe this is, I don't know if target disk mode relies on that. Maybe it does, maybe it doesn't, because actually I was upgrading one of the workstations.
Yeah, I don't think you can do target disk mode from USB 2.
No, I don't believe so. I think that's only a FireWire.
It's only FireWire, yeah.
But there's a dual G4 at work. Now, when I got it, it was a number of years ago, and I got it with two winners of media options, a zip drive and a DVD RAM drive.
Yeah.
Oops. So, consequently, it doesn't have a DVD drive. So, installing things like Tiger is very difficult unless you start up. So basically what I did is I brought my PowerBook in, put it up in target disk mode, put the Tiger DVD in, and the machine was, and it's a dual G4 500 megahertz, and it was more than happy to acknowledge that it thought a DVD drive was there, because it was.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think they're going to maintain it. The 800 stuff they may only do on premium machines like the desktop machines.
Yeah, yeah, that could be.
There isn't one on the new iMac, is there?
I don't believe.
Is there?
We can check the specs.
But typically, the iMac is the lower tier, so maybe when they do come out with a, I don't know what they're going to call it. What are they going to call it?
What's that? What do you think they're going to call it?
The new high-end desktop. They can't call it Power Mac.
I bet it'll be, why not? The iMac is the Intel iMac, so I bet the Power Mac will be just Power Mac with an Intel chip.
They
want all the computers to have Mac in the name. I think that's the main impetus behind the change in name on the laptops.
Yeah, I don't know. I think they want to get the word power out of there.
Oh, yeah, that might be right. Oh, yeah.
So maybe it'll be
that's a good point.
Pro, maybe the Mac Pro. Oh, that's kind of boring. Yeah, what are they going to call it? I don't know.
That's a good point. I hadn't thought about that. Hey, I bet you're right.
Let's have a contest,
Okay.
We'll forget. I don't know. But what would you call?
Yeah.
The new Pro series of desktop machines, the high end machines.
Yeah.
And I'm gonna guess the word power is not gonna be in there.
You're right. Yeah.
The Macintel Pro.
Yeah.
I don't know. Something like that. All right. What else we got?
Oh man, I think we got to be done. I mean, we're at the limit.
Are we ready?
Hey, I did want to say something though. I've talked to you about this, John. And I think I've talked about it on the podcast a little bit. The studio that the soundproof studio, the mostly soundproof studio that I've been building above my office here, actually got
mostly.
I didn't need to
soundproof or not soundproof.
I soundproofed it to the point where you can't hear it in my house or at my neighbor's house if I'm playing my drums upstairs. So really, that's
all. It's like being almost pregnant.
Yeah, and that's true, actually. Yeah, it's 100% or nothing. That's right. But But I finally got the final certificate of occupancy on it this week, which was very exciting. So I need to come up with a name for it. So I figure I would throw that out to you, the listener, if anybody has any ideas for my little sanctuary upstairs. So, and I think next week I'll probably be podcasting from up there. I think I'll have moved all the station up there, if you will.
Sanctuary. I remember that from Logan's Run. You ever watch that?
From what?
Logan's Run?
I don't remember Logan's Run.
Oh, wow. I'll have to let you borrow that.
Yeah.
It's a good old cheesy sci-fi flick.
Cool. Huh? I'll have to check it out.
Sanctuary. Oh, the band. Yeah, the band. Boy, those poor guys.
Yeah, they had three shows off. they had to go to the supermarket and get their lunch and dinner off the little sample plates, right?
They weren't able to read.
Actually, wasn't there a band that did that? I think they called themselves the Samples. they did. That's how the Samples got their name. This isn't the Samples that you're hearing. But, all right. So
what do I see here next week?
I think next week, and I'll make this. This will be one of those self fulfilling prophecies. We want to talk about iLife, and of course, my wife uses iPhoto a lot, and she has become quite an expert on it. So I figured instead of me gabbing with you about iPhoto, we'd bring Lisa in for a guest appearance. Because the two of you could actually talk intelligently about it, whereas I would just, mumble and drool.
Maybe she could. I've used it a bit. I haven't used the whole thing, but I have used the iPhoto part, and there are some things I like and some I don't. So
cool. So we'll do some of that next week and probably finish up. We've got a whole lot more that we just simply didn't get to tonight. Of course, I'd like to thank Cashfly for hosting the podcast tonight. And if you're interested in advertising on this this little thing here, you can contact the Backbeat Media Podcast Network. iTunes comments, right? We love the iTunes comments.
Podcast Alley, vote.
There you go.
Right? Yeah. We want to know what you think.
We do want to know what you think. And you know what? Other listeners, other potential listeners want to know what you think. So, very important. I think it's very important. All right, that's it. Here they come. Oh, hit the mixer level. Okay, so audio comments. Mac Geek Gab at MacObserver.com. 206-666-GEEK. Show notes at MacGeekGab.com or MacObserver.com/podcast. Thanks, folks. Stay subscribed.
Jeez. I like my new mic setup.
Oh, yeah. You sound good tonight. I think you're loud enough.